Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
And love you so badly, I could.
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello everyone and welcome again to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, December 12th, 2012, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by the legendary Les Thatcher. And Les, I know it's got to feel some weeks like, you know, you could attach a handle to my ass the way you carry the show. But I'll definitely need your help with this tonight, as growing up in the Mid-Atlantic area, as everyone probably knows by now, in the 80s, I basically missed the entire career of our guest coming up here tonight, who is a real legend amongst anyone who lives on the Gulf Coast. Mr. Ken Lucas is going to be on with us, and obviously I'm going to need your expertise for a guy who has got a lot of tie-ins with you.
Yeah, he's a longtime friend and honestly one of the best talents I've ever seen in the business. You know, but I want to tell you that today is only going to happen again in 100 years. It's 12, 12, 12.
Yes, it is. Yes, none of us who are going to be talking tonight, or if you're listening to this,
we'll
we're
be around.
To see this again.
You know what? And I'm glad to hear that. I don't want to be around.
Hey, look. Well, we are only 9 days away from possibly the Mayans, which I wish if the end of the world was going to happen, it would happen before this coming Sunday, so I wouldn't have to spend $50 on TLC by WWE.
Right, and you are going to spend that $50. Can I show you some oceanfront property in Oklahoma or something?
Yeah, Monday, I don't, you know, if anybody wants to actually follow me on Twitter, it's at Sempervivi, but I was watching the show, and I made it to, I'm not even sure what point I made it to, but the Come On Man segment was still happening on Monday Night Football, and that's as far as I made it on Monday night. I went back yesterday and basically fast-forwarded through it, and the only thing I really got out of the show at all was the fact that Cody Rhodes' mustache is apparently really over in New York.
That's wonderful. And that what I thought was amazing, I was more impressed by watching the surgeon named Tom Brady pick apart the Texans.
Was that was, yeah, and I forget even about Tom Brady for a second. How did your heart stop, or did your breathing, was that interrupted at all when you saw Robert Griffin's leg whip around on Sunday?
Wow. Yeah, it did. It did. That was amazing. I was scared. I thought, come on, man. But now I guess there's still a chance that he may start on Sunday. I don't. At least that was the way I was left with what I heard today. I guess it was a minor sprain, a mild sprain, or something like that. But it's so I don't know whether they'll play him. But the kid that the backup is the one that threw the touchdown pass in the overtime. So, you know,
Kirk Cousins.
You know, a lot of good young ball players. You know, the crazy thing is, you know, years ago, Most people would say, well, you know, the stuff they do in college, spread offense, this, that, and the other thing, doesn't work in the pros. But I think that's one thing Shanahan, RG3, and the Skins have proven this year, that they brought his, you know, what he was accustomed to the pros, and has been damn effective for him.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, even tempering it as the season has gone on, a lot of people are, oh, Robert Griffin's going to get killed. He's running too much. Not really.
Yeah.
A lot of the design runs they had for him at the beginning of the season, they've been able to adapt that to, you know, and draw it back a little bit. And his precise passing is the thing that is, it really is impressive in that he just, the way he's able to thread the ball in there. And Kirk Cousins, the one he threaded in there, at the end of the game, and then basically taking a Robert Griffin play and running it in for the 2-point conversion, it was, that was about as exciting of a Redskin win as there's been since, Gibbs taking them to the playoffs the last time around.
Yeah, let's be really serious here. I don't see him going to the Super Bowl, but I think there's an amazing improvement over the last couple of years. And so, I think there's a lot to look forward to with them. But, you know, going back to Monday night, a friend of mine said, well, you know, the Texans, they're 1-11-1. And I said, okay. But I said, you know, I don't care who they're if Tom Brady is in the game and there's 2 minutes left on the clock, I'm not ruling him out. But he just, I mean, that second drive on Monday night, it was like, is there even another team on the field? I mean, they were just picking them. He was picking their secondary apart just so bad. I mean, it was amazing, I thought. You know, but that's the difference between being a top pro and just being there, right?
Yes. Yeah, and, you know, the Eli Manning's another one, too. I don't know what it is with the Giants where, you know, they sometimes fall asleep against Philadelphia and Washington and teams like that, yet the 49ers, they go out there and smoke. The Saints this past week, they go out there and smoke. The Packers, they beat. You know, New England and the Giants are, you know, the talk about good, solid, strong organizations who have done a lot of smart things and gotten the right guys in there. And here we are again, you know, going into the postseason in the NFL, and they're right back up there again.
You know, the cool thing about it is that it's really kind of unpredictable. I mean, you know, week to week you can say this, you know, this team, you know, these guys are destined to go there, and then wait a minute, they just got their asses handed to them. You know, well, it's like with the Falcons. It, you know, the first part of the year they were winning, and people just weren't giving them any credit. And then you start giving them credit, and they start losing. So it was like, what's the story here? You know, we were talking about money. I didn't watch all of Raw either. The one thing, they had some long matches, which I'm not, you know, on some hand, you know, you might think that's good. On other hands, it's not so good when they put some of those guys out there for any lengthy time. The thing that I thought was the whole shtick with AJ and Vicky is just god awful. I mean, and my point, you know, the thing that when AJ's throwing this hissy fit, I'm thinking, and she's supposed to be a baby face? I don't quite understand that either. I don't know. We talked about it last week, but I'm more curious about the final two matches on the pay-per-view as to what, you know, the outcome, because I'm pretty firm in the fact that, you know, the Shield and Ziggler almost have to win especially the Shield, because I think people are kind of accustomed to Ziggler losing at this point in time. It's almost like if he wins, it'll be a major surprise.
Oh, yeah. I still think that, I'm not saying he would be better off losing in a way, but I could see him losing. And to me, it would be, it's like the idea that you had about just, you know, he loses, and then, you know, you see him talking to Steamboat, or you see, you know, and they do something with him after that. I'd be fine with that. I would be fine. But then again, it doesn't really, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense of the way they have that, the goofy thing anyway. But I guess it could be Cena's way to get to The Rock somehow if Rock goes ahead and ends up being the one that beats Punk. When it comes to The Shield, I don't know if I was surprised that it was Ryback and Roman Reigns. It seemed to be at the end there slamming into each other. They did make it look real in that, you know, it was very, you know, stiff, and the shot of Ryback shoving Reigns up against the ropes as the show went off. Obviously, they're not going to pin Ryback. It'll either be Daniel Bryan or Cena, and most likely it'll be Bryan. But is there really, is there any way in the world, I know there is because they've made so many mistakes, but is there any way in the world where the Shield doesn't go over? That, it's just, is it humanly possible for them to make that mistake again?
Well, you know, if they think that, you know, what they've done so far, you know, it's kind of established them, but but again, that doesn't warrant beating them in an actual match, because, you know, that's the proof of the pudding is not so much who they jump, you know, from behind and double up on. But when you put these guys actually in a legitimate match, they've got to shine there too. I mean, they, you know, and even if they win, you know, by some heelish way, the point is they need to get their hands raised. But again, you know, we talked last week. WWE has this thing about sending people home happy, and if that's their stance on that particular match, I think it's a mistake.
Well, and that's, you know, we talked about a little bit last week, too. When you look at the card from top to bottom, and I know you'll be doing this with Vic Sosa this week on the Wrestling Weekly show, so I won't, you know, have to tip your hand here too much, but you got Mysterio and Sin Cara against Team Road Scholars, Antonio Cesaro against R-Truth, The Shield against Ryback and Bryan and Kane, Ziggler-Cena, Barrett and Kingston, and then Big Show and Sheamus, and... Okay, give Sheamus, even though it doesn't really make any sense to me, I'll give you Sheamus defeating the Big Show to take that title. The other five matches on the show are to me, you have to have the heel win all of those. It makes the most sense for all of those, especially the way Wade Barrett was treated on Monday night. Now, I know in their world that's a means to get to the end, but that was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was, you know, but when you, now you just sort of run the card down, and when you really, and this is no, not to belittle anybody on the card, but when you stop and think about it, how many guys on that particular card are really over it? I don't mean that they entertain you. I don't mean that they're neat to look at or they do neat things. But how many of those guys actually are you saying, man, I'm willing to spend the $50 just to see so-and-so?
None. I mean, I hate to say none. There's.
Well, no,
Cena,
it's all right, because that's what I expected you to say.
Yeah. Because on top of it, too, there are matches that you've already seen before. And it's like Cesaro and Truth, unfortunately, they've done this over three pay-per-views instead of just doing it on TV and leading to one pay-per-view. I understand the theory behind that, but we've already seen it. I mean, all of this stuff, with the exception of what's the Shield going to do, you know, this is all stuff that's, you know, really old hat.
Yeah. It really is. But like I say, you know, most of these guys, Cena is obviously over strong. And that's, you know, because how many years has that been taken to build him to that point? You know, whether you like him personally or don't, you know, or some fans do and some don't. The point is, you know, the name is recognizable, and, you know, I can go down to the gym tomorrow and talk to somebody who's got an 8-year-old kid or something and say, your son's a wrestling fan. Yeah, who's his favorite? John Cena. You know, my 7-year-old grandson is, that's, you know, he's just become a wrestling fan in the past year, I guess, and that's the big thing for him, Cena. But, again, it just belies the thing that we've been singing about for so long. There's no depth there. I mean, he's, you know, you can name guys who are entertaining, guys who are, you know, talented athletes, but they're not drawing cards. And they're, well, what was the rating Monday night was a 2.7, which is up from a 2.6.
Big deal there.
Yeah, you know, it's not that strong. So,
no, you know, I know we're gonna bump up to a break here. Prime last week when I was talking to him, it's like, well, you know, after football's over, they're gonna get that bump, and it's like, Yeah, you know what? Technically, they will get a bump, and that's one of their biggest problems is they get that bump because football ends and you're geared up for WrestleMania and the Royal Rumble. So it's artificial. And frankly, and again, we'll go to break after this, the bump that they're going to get last year, no matter what they threw out there, and this included The Rock, they could never get past about a 3-1 or a 3-2. This year, the way this thing is structured, they're not going to get over a 3, and if they do, it's going to be actually pretty rare. I really believe that. But we'll go to break here and then be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling Television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
Where those streets are. All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and coming up in about 10 minutes, Ken Lucas is going to be joining us. And looks like
that was my
listening
song. Did you hear my song? You ought to listen to the whole thing, really. If you're into the doo-wop groups, and the Drifters were obviously one of the greatest of all time. They do a hell of a job on that. They really do. You know, what I want to talk to you about, forget wrestling for a minute, is Henderson and Diaz and the Canadian kid that wore BJ Penn out. Everybody told me Diaz, and I watched this thing, and I said, you know, I'm not an expert at this, but if Henderson doesn't retain the title, then somebody's paid the friggin' judges off, man. I mean, he just wore Diaz's ass out.
He's scary, isn't he? You know, I don't think Henderson gets enough credit. And I think the reason why is he's in these good competitive fights and a lot of really fun fights. And that crazy kick that Anthony Pettis threw with the last WEC show, where he beat Henderson, but he had that spectacular kick where he basically jumped off the cage and the foot he planted with on the cage, he whipped around and hit Henderson with. And the really two close fights with the Frankie Edgar, who's so incredibly popular, most people think Henderson won those fights. There's a vocal minority that says he doesn't, but, you know, they were incredibly close. And I think because of those things, people forget how good and how well-rounded and how just he knows how to use his reach. He's a damn good wrestler. I think he was an NAIA champion. I can't remember, a Division II champion. But he is just a perfectly almost complete fighter. And I think, I tell you, those guys – Henderson kind of is, you know, the next generation already there. But there was, to me, a passing of the torch in a lot of ways, because Alexander Gustafsson's win over Shogun Hool was not awe-inspiring or anything like that, but it was, in a lot of ways, a passing of the torch in the 205-pound division. Neither one of those guys can beat John Jones, I don't think, but at least Gustafsson, you know, is working his way up there and is something new and fresh. And Rory McDonald is a terrifying. He's terrifying. He signed with the UFC when he was 19 years old. And people were, you know, the ones who had heard about him in the gym understood why, but a lot of people were flabbergasted until they had a chance to see him. And that was a true passing of the torch from BJ Penn, too, because, you know, Penn is incredible. I mean, he was a phenom, just an absolute phenom. And he's still not an old guy. He's only like 33 years old. I mean, he's not an old man or anything like that, but he's had a long, illustrious career. But that was truly a passing of a torch between BJ Penn, who was a little guy who could kind of do everything at a time people couldn't, and now he passes it to McDonald, who is, you know, can do everything that those old guys used to do, but does them on another level. He is very, very good. And I thought that show, you know, the ones in the summertime are going to have problems with baseball and the whole nine yards, but the FX show or the Fox shows that are put on during football season, as long as they're hitting home runs, it's a good thing for both the UFC and the deal they have. And I thought they hit a real home run.
Yeah. Now, you tell me if I'm wrong here, but at some point I thought Penn was looking at the referee to stop this damn thing. Get me out of here. Honestly.
A couple times where he was like, there was only, I think it was in the second round, and it was only about 2 minutes in. And it's like he's looking up at the clock, and it's like that's what it seemed to be him doing, was looking up at the clock or looking up, you know, he could have been looking up to see where maybe McDonald was, but he, you know, God, they were both standing up and McDonald was on him. He knew where he was. And to me, that was just looking up at the clock going, how long do I have to survive this kid for?
Yeah. You know, the only thing that I found, and it wasn't, objectionable really, but I thought it was kind of bad form for McDonald to taunt him at the end there. I really, you know, I mean, I think, come on, give him a little more respect than that. You know, you've beat him. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You know, but when he started doing the alley shuffle, I said, come on, cut that crap.
Yeah. And that, I tell you, Brian, I heard a little update today. He's going to get what McDonald wanted, which was a rematch against Carlos Condit, who just came off losing to George St. Pierre, but is a phenomenal wrestler. Just, you know, again, it's going to be a hell of a test for him, even more than McDonald, even though we already beat him once. They're going to do that fight in Montreal, which this is where, you know, Rory McDonald kind of made his bones at, training with George St. Pierre and making his name. And I have a feeling with the way the crowd reacted to him and kind of the way his demeanor is and how he carries himself, I could see him, this is as close as we're going to get to a Bret Hart situation where he may be booed everywhere he goes in America, but he's going to be the king. Outside of George St. Pierre, he's going to be the king of Canada.
You know, I told a friend of mine today at the gym, we were talking about it. I said, you know, the thing that caught my eye, I mean, just not that it was important one way or the other, but, you know, most of the fighters, you know, when you see them coming into the building, they're coming in with sweats on, towel over their head, this and that. And here comes McDonald with a coat and tie and just like he's going to a business meeting, for Christ's sake, you know. But there's nothing wrong with that either. It's kind of classy, and it makes him stand out from the crowd, more or less.
Yeah, I like that a lot, that little madman look that he seemed to have, too, with the slick-down hair and the skinny tie. I thought it was one of those things. If everybody did it, you know, it loses its uniqueness, but because of, you know, how guys look in the UFC with the tattoos and it's metal or it's a hardcore rap song or something like that, when you have that other dynamic, it makes you stand out, and he doesn't have to cut these wild promos. I don't think he can anyway, like a lot of guys, like the Diaz brothers and people like that. But, you know, he could be, in a way, a kind of like a Matt Hughes, you know?
I told somebody one of the reasons I like Dos Santos so much is because he has no tattoos.
Yeah.
He's clean. I mean, he stands out because he's unmarked, for Christ's sake.
Do you have any tattoos? Have you ever wanted to get a tattoo?
No, I don't like needles. I don't even like getting a shot. Are you kidding me? From a doctor. I think part of that is my mother's stepfather, my grandfather, he had tattoos from World War I. And the thing I remember most as a kid is him talking about he wished he did not have them, and how, you know, he felt bad about getting them and this and that and the other thing. And I don't know that that has anything to do with me, but no, it's just, you know, I never crossed my mind to put a needle on me for any reason that I can think of.
We are kindred spirits that way then, because my grandfather, who served in World War II, he had, you know, the one around his thumb, I guess, that a guy had did in the service, and he had, I think it was a boat on his forearm, and he said the exact same thing. He just wished he never had gotten them. And that did stick in my mind, too. Plus, I just never thought I had the body for it anyway. I never really quite understood that. Plus,
I think now, I know as a kid, there were certain things, like, you know, the type of suit, the guys, when I was a kid, you watch the guys carrying the Halliburtons. Buddy Rogers had the full-length camel-colored trench coat, you know, with a stuff like that. And as you know, you try to mimic your idols and stuff, right? But I'm thinking, if I were a kid today, I don't think, gee, I got to get my whole body covered with ink. No, I don't think that wouldn't, you know, if that was between me and being a wrestler, I may have never become a wrestler. I don't know.
Yeah, for me, it was always the horseman. So I got to think about, you know, man, I want a Rolex and all this stuff one day. Unfortunately, I've gone through my money a lot like Ric Flair has, except I never made Ric Flair money, so that's not good. But
somebody told me that when Arn first started working backstage for WWE, that he had mentioned to somebody, he said, I'm not sure if I with a wrestling company or in a prison yard, you know, because of all the tattoos and stuff. But, you know, and I realized,
I talked about that too with Vinnie Marsaglia, who's, I mean, a great guy and a nice guy and a great young talent, but it's like, you know, Bob and I are around the same age. We're both in the 40 region, and neither one of us have tattoos, and it's like, man, it's amazing.
Yeah,
in one generation, how it changes.
Well, you know, part of that, I think part of the image, you know, I wonder how many guys today, you know, whether you're watching UFC or watching WWE, think, wow, okay, I want to be a wrestler. I want to be a mixed martial arts fighter. I guess I better go get some tats, you know, so I can fit in. But again, that's why Del Santos won. I mean, not that he's a hell of a fighter on top of it, but one of the things is I think the first time I watched him, I'm thinking, Jesus, he has no tattoos. And I thought, is he walked in, he's in the wrong place. He must. But whatever, yeah. But I thought, you know, that was the best show UFC's had on Fox. Don't you?
The first one was special because it was a heavyweight fight. But, I think it absolutely was. Outside of that, it was. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the one thing they do with the Fox shows is if you have a Fox radio affiliate, and, you know, the boom of all these stations now, there seems to be one somewhere on your dial. In a lot of markets, they were playing that. They were simulcasting it again, which it had a big wrap-up show afterwards. And I know that doesn't mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, but it's still a really nice thing and a really old-school thing because, you know, boxing on the radio and stuff like that, it may have been generation removed, but for them to actually put it on there and let it supersede the NBA or any other thing that they could be talking about is a cool thing too. And Rich is going to get, sorry, yelling at me if we don't go to break here, because we want to get Ken Lucas on the line. So we'll throw it to break and then come back with Mr. Lucas. Stay tuned.
This is Annie Lennox of Eurythmics for RAD. Please don't drink and drive. And don't drive if someone else has been drinking. Thank you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin.
What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back,
ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the get up?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screens.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
How can we help our kids prepare for the future? Hey, I'm Shelley Wright. I don't have to tell you that children face pretty tough challenges these days. It can be hard to keep them involved in their schoolwork. We adults need to make sure our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest, like music. Not only is music in school fun, but studies show that kids who learn music find science and math concepts a little easier to grasp, and that they show significant increases in self-esteem and thinking skills. And music and creativity go together, too. Your school music teacher can tell you all about it. So help prepare your children for life. Encourage them to learn to love music.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Satcher, joined by me, Mike Sempervivi, and we're very lucky to have on another legend of the Gulf Coast scene, Mr. Ken Lucas, on with us. And Ken, how are you this evening?
Doing great, my friend. How are you doing?
Hey, no complaints whatsoever.
It has been years of negotiations, millions of dollars, and we finally have my childhood idol on the show.
Oh, Les, he was always carrying my bags in and doing everything he had to do. I loved it. I loved it.
How you doing, my friend?
Guys, sound like you're having a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? You know, that's all I can do at this point in my life is laugh a little bit. Hell.
Oh yeah, well, you got to do that now.
Yes, absolutely. You know, let's start the ball rolling here. Mike Boyette just passed away. You must have worked with Mike a lot along the Gulf Coast.
Oh, Mike and me was real good friends, Les. And it just broke my heart. You know, a lot of people, you know, didn't like Mike. They don't like me or they don't like you. But Mike was a guy, he was his own man. He'd tell you like it was, and I respected that.
Yeah. You know, that's a lot about Ken Lucas being his own man, too.
Well, I've been told that many a time, too, you know. But I was really shocked when I got a call from Rick yesterday, and he said that Les would like to have you on the show, and he's going to give you $25,000. I said, man, this is great. You know, pick up a few extra dollars on the way, you know.
That's some of the big money I made with Nick Goulas. I wanted to share
it with you. Oh, you did good with him. Well, you know one thing, Les, and I think that you know this. You know, the reason that Nick didn't use you as good as he should have is because I told Nick one time you were financially independent from your parents, and you didn't need a lot
yeah,
of money.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell Mike the rib that when I first came into Nashville that you told me. Tell him tell him the story.
About the money?
Yeah.
Well, that's just me and Nick was out there talking one night, and Les just got in there, and we were talking, and he said, well, that's your boy's a good worker. He's a funny kid. I said, yeah, he is. I said, Nick, you know, he really don't need the money. I said, his mom and dad's very, very wealthy, and I said, he gets a check of about $1,000 a week. So I said, really don't worry about him too much. He said, by God, I won't, boy. I'll tell you right now, I won't. So, you know, Nick was sharp.
You know? Yeah, you know, Mike, when Kenny told me that, I decided I waited to unpack the trailer a while.
But it was great. It was just great, you know. Then I had to go by down there when I went up to Tennessee. That's the first reunion I ever went to, Les, and it was really a nice one. And I'd like to take this time now to tell Scott Teal, and his wife. They did a fantastic job up there, and I was very, very, very surprised. It was as nice as it was. It was great.
Yeah, it was.
And I seen a lot of guys I hadn't seen for years, and Bob Roop and Garvin. And, you know, we're all just passing by, so enjoy every minute you can. And you, I was surprised to see you. You know, you've gained a little weight, maybe about 300 pounds, but you look good. You know. But nonetheless, I was really glad to see all you guys. It was a real honor, you know.
Yeah,
I had
it was a lot of fun.
He didn't want to drive, and I drove him up there and got him situated, and then everybody did to help him. So.
we compared stories about Hall conning you or me into driving when he fell asleep.
Oh, that was great, huh?
Yeah.
You get out of a town about 10 miles, and you look over, and he was going off the road. I said, you all right, Dennis? Yeah, a little tired, you know, and everything. Then the next thing I hear, that he's driving a truck cross country.
Yeah, you know, when I heard that, I thought,
for a contract.
Yeah, I thought, Jesus, he couldn't get from Memphis back to Nashville. How the hell is he running cross country with an 18-wheeler?
It was good to see Dennis, too, and the lady. It was good to see them both.
Well, you know, for those listening who don't know a lot about Ken, you started in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, I did, Les. I worked out, and I met a couple of guys down at the Y. And one day, Al Pago walked up to me. Lou Kim used to go down as a big guy. The guy was a real good wrestler and a good shooter. Lou Kim was about 6'5", weighed about 310, 315, 320, you know, and he's the guy that went overseas and just about wiped everybody up, you know. And Lou is one of the nicest guys you ever met in your life. And they asked me to come down and work out with them. And I worked out for a year before I had my first match. And I had it in Holbrook, Arizona. And I went out there. I wrestled against Pago, which I'd worked out a lot of times. And he made a fool out of me. So I learned real quick to keep my mouth shut and do what they say.
Who'd you work for there? Who was promoting in Arizona at the time?
The promoter there was Monty Ledoux.
Okay.
Monty's been dead for quite a few years. Monty, I was fortunate in that town, Les, because Monty wouldn't break anybody in that couldn't handle themselves. You know what I'm saying to you?
Right.
And I'm not saying that I'm tough, but at least I went down and worked out. And when I worked out for a year, I was getting really disgusted. You know what I mean? I thought, God, you know, how long is this going to have to go on? Then he came up one day and he says, kid, he says, you got to break in this business. He said, you get to go to Holbrook, Arizona, which was only like 450 miles away. So, well, I really thank you, Monty, you know. But, no, it was all right. Monty was good to me. And then Ernie Mohammed came in, and I think that put the finishes touch on the territory.
Yeah, I worked out there for Mohammed for about 2.5 months in 66. And that was, yeah, him and Edie, right? Wasn't that his wife's name,
Edie?
Edie?
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had an old grocery store that they turned into an office.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, but, you know, he tried real hard, I guess, Les. And when you don't know the business, a lot of guys say, well, I can get in that business and do this and that. Nah, try it one time.
Yeah.
You know that, Les. It's not like...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Everybody thinks it looks easy and... Easy trips and good money and big money. I remember times that I went to towns and made $7. And that's
I was just
going to
ask you if you remember what you made on your first payoff.
$7.
$7.
Yeah, and then I had a real thing happen to me after that. I walked outside and got in the car, and Tarzan, Tyler, and Lou Kim, and there was one other guy, I forget which one it was, and I got my money, and I was sitting there in the back seat, and they were... getting ready to take a ride and go have something to eat. I didn't have it $7 in hell. I thought, man, what am I going to do, you know? And then here Tarzan Torville pulls out. He says, you know, this payoff is craps. He said, I made $200 tonight. And I thought, $200? I got $7. You know? I mean, the guys took a liking to me. You know, I didn't ever bitch or complain. Sometimes I did. But the thing about it is it's like it's just, it was a great education. I'm sure you'll say that too, Les.
Yeah, absolutely.
You learned things that most people will never even think of in their lifetime.
Right. Yeah.
Let me ask you, as a boxer, you were a Golden Gloves boxer. Did when you got in there, what was your? Did you wrestle at all in school or anything like that, or were you?
Oh, I wrestled. I went down and worked out at the YMCA, but I worked out those old pros that take and put your head on the mat and run it across the mat. And they didn't make it easy on you, Rick. You know, it was Les will tell you that it was a whole different ball game, right, Les?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I'm like Kenny. I wouldn't tell you I'm tough, but some of the kids that are into business today would have never lasted to get broke into business 50 years ago because...
Oh, I know.
It was just a whole other thing. Yeah, absolutely.
I know.
Absolutely. When was the first... When did you first go into the Gulf Coast? What year?
I went 1963.
Okay.
1963. Well, I came
really
in
now?
There, I should, wait, I came in at 61, Les. I'm sorry.
Let me... I know... From the time I 66 is when you and I first met, but we worked in Louisiana, and I know Louisiana Mobile, and Mike, if you didn't know, Louisiana at the time was Lee Field, so it was a golf, you know, it was owned by the same people that own Mobile. But you predominantly worked Nashville and the Gulf Coast. Now, I know you came up to Southeastern up in Knoxville with us for a while, but you could have gone any place you wanted to. And
well,
you just kind of wanted to hold
it. On that list, I'll tell you, I've told a lot of guys this. Why do you stay down in Mobile, man? That place is a cesspool of wrestling, you know? I didn't find it that way.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of stories and everything, and a lot of things that I thought was going to happen didn't happen. You had a lot of good talent in here. The area was just beautiful and fantastic. And why should I go someplace and make $800 when I can be down there and making $4 or $5 and not going anywhere but the towns at night? Short trips.
Sure.
I could never understand why a person want to go to territory and make $800 and spend $500 on the road.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, you know, that's, it was good territory, but I'm like you in that respect. I know a lot of people said, well, you could have gone here, gone there. I said, you know, once I got established in three or four territories in the Southeast, there was no reason. To change territories, logistically, it was easier, and you didn't get snowed out. You didn't lose a lot of dates in the winter because of snow drifts or anything. So
that's
it was, although I can remember driving through some of that soup along the Louisiana coast that they called fog and thinking it might as well have been snow, for Christ's sake.
That's like, you know, you say about staying down here. I went to Knoxville, and I went to Tennessee. I stayed up to Tennessee for 2 years up there.
Right.
And I took the book over for a while. And the thing about it is, it's just like a loyalty and a dime will buy you a cup of coffee. And I had a lot of guys that stuck with me up there and was good guys, and I don't hold no feelings about nobody. But, like, I went into Kansas City, and we got in there in the wintertime last, and it was a nightmare, the snow and cold. And Buck Robley called me, and I worked for Buck three or four places, and I think Buck's probably one of the greatest bookers in the world. You may not like him, like I say, about certain people, or vice versa, with me or you or who it may be, but I don't let that stand in front of me to make money.
No,
and
you're right.
Ars gave me a chance, and I always produced. I brought guys in the ring and put them asleep and did what I had to do, and the guys that was working there, we all did what we had to do. Everybody says, well, you drew a lot of money. You did this and that. No, I didn't draw a lot of money. It was the guys that was underneath us that helped us out that drew the money.
Yeah, well, it took the whole card, the job.
That's right.
You know,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. You and I touched on this briefly when we were in Nashville back in September. But you remember the riot in La Ronger when Kirby and I were working with you and Dalton?
Well, it was me and Dalton and Frank, and they come back after me. You know, I got my tooth knocked through my mouth, and you know how that started, don't you?
Yeah, you flipped the popcorn onto the cop.
Popcorn, it went down in front of her blouse, and the guy picked up a chair and whacked me over the head with the side of my mouth.
Oh.
And that's when everything started. You know, they brought the cops down there and everything, and Ohio patrolmen, and they told us we're not going back out. And Donnie looked over at me, and Donnie was all split in the head from they getting hit with that whiskey bottle. And his head was hanging down, and he says, we're going back out. Frank said, yep. And I said, yeah, we're going back out. And on the way out, we knocked a few heads together, and we got back in there and did our deal. But that was one of the worst riots that I've been in. The thing you got to worry about the South, they'll catch you.
Yeah, I remember when we came to get you guys, Kirby went with Donnie, and I was with you, and we just about got back to the dressing room, and I forget what it was. Somebody threw something at you or something, and
going
you shot
after,
back
yeah.
out around me, and I said, God damn it, I got to go get him again.
Yeah, I remember. Boy, that was something. We had to go with Donnie to the hospital. That they said, don't let him go to sleep tonight. His head was all hanging down. They told him,
"Your
dog was tougher than nails." You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And
yes.
It was hard to hurt Fargo. he could get busted up, hit around, knocked around, or anything, but he'd still come at you.
A lot of normal people couldn't go through what Donnie Fargo's gone through in a lifetime, for Christ.
Got about 10 lifetimes that he did, maybe more than that.
Yes,
and then, you
absolutely.
Know, I got together when I was out in Texas in Amarillo, and Paul Christie came in there, and Paul, everybody said we favored each other, looked a lot alike, you know what I mean? And we went back to Arizona, and DiBiase just took the book over, and it was doing real good, and all of a sudden things did happen. Heck, I don't know what happened there. But we had to get a place to go, and I told Paul, I said, Paul, let's go into Mobile. We'll go in there as brothers, and he says, Ken, I don't know. He says, right now, he says, I don't know what to do. I'm mixed up. And he went and talked to DiBiase, and DiBiase says, don't go back in Amarillo, Chris. He says, go with Ken. He says, you'll make money. And we did. Wasn't great big money, but it was good money. We didn't live like poor people. We didn't live like rich people. We were very content.
Well, you know, that Louisiana end, they were all short trips, and it was an easy territory to work, for Christ's sake.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like I was
absolutely.
So glad to see Dennis Hall up there at that reunion in September. Dennis was a super good partner, too, and a good guy. He just had one big problem. He had a hot temper.
You know, I've said to him all, when I, after leaving there, when he spent all that time he spent with George Gulas, I said, did they throw about 100 milligrams of Valium down you before you went out there? Because I know when I was his partner, if somebody would screw a spot up or something, he'd lose his temper.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, how the hell did you go out there with George and not go crazy every damn night?
Well, you know, Denny, I walked in the TV room in Chattanooga, and Dick was in there, and I said, where's Dennis? And he said, he's outside fighting a Mexican boy. And I told Dennis, I said to him, he come back in there, and Denny got mad because he had plugs put in his head. You remember that?
Right, yes.
And he put hair plugs in, and he got mad at Katiana in Columbus. And he'd come back, and I said, Denny, let me get in there. And he says, no. He said, I told him, if he pulls my hair one more time, I'm going to whack you. And, boy, he knocked the crap out of him. And I told him we'd come back in. I said, Dennis, we're running out of Mexicans. You know,
well,
you've had
some interesting partners, too, because not only you talk about Paul Christie there, but Kevin Sullivan, really early in his career, too, was teamed up with you, right?
Oh, yeah. Kevin was with me down here, and then we were together in Kansas City, you know. And Kevin turned out to be quite a superstar, and I was glad for him and everything, you know. And as time goes by, things change, and you don't see people. A lot of people don't realize. They say, well, don't you guys ever get together? Yeah, we did up in Tennessee. But the thing about it is just like everybody's life changes.
Yeah.
Nothing stays the same. The only thing that's permanent is change itself. And like Les, I always had a lot of fun with Les, you know, and everything. And he lived right down the street from me. He used to have to come borrow money to pay his rent. And,
I'm going to tell you a story now. This will take a little time, but I'm going to tell you. Lucas was a hell of a river with everybody, okay? But Hall and I got one on him. Now, Kent, I'm going to tell you, Kenny would not have a phone in his house because that was his privacy. He did, you know, he was wanted his privacy. When he worked in the business, he was at the matches, he was a wrestler, and he was there to the public. At home, he was a private man. So anyway, we both lived on J Street in Nashville, just half a block apart about. And anyway, when he moved in there, he told his sons, he said, now, kids at school ask you what your dad does for a living. Tell them I'm a shoe salesman or something. Don't tell them I'm a wrestler. Well, where we lived was, what, Kenny, 5 minutes from the fairgrounds?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, about 5 minutes. Anyway, from the old fairgrounds Coliseum where we wrestled on Wednesday nights, Mike, was about 5 minutes from where we lived. So anyway, one night, Luke was on the last match. Hall and I had planned to pull a rib on him. So we're standing out, leaning on the railing where the baby faces came out of the dressing room, so that when he went to the ring, you know, we're standing right there, and he had to come by, hey, you know, and so we wanted him to know we were there. The minute their match started, we ran out, jumped into Hall's car, ran over to our street. We about got to Luke's house. Dennis turned the headlights out and pulled in the driveway, and I jumped out, and there's a big tree set right out at the end of Kenny's driveway. And I had a hammer and a nail and a sign, and I nailed that sign on that tree. Hall's turning around, and with the headlights off, and the minute I jumped back in, we're right back to the fairgrounds. And when Kenny's match is over and comes out, we're standing in the exact same place that we were when he went to the ring. So anyway, we thought when he pulled in that night, went home, his headlights would hit that tree and he'd see that sign. But he didn't. And the next morning, his kids are getting ready to go to school, and they came back and said, Dad, there's a sign on the tree out here. And the sign said, home of Ken Lucas, TV star and professional wrestler, guided tours daily.
I remember. You know, I tell you who gave me a call today. And it was really nice. He wrote me a real nice letter last after I got back from Tennessee. Was Jim Lancaster?
Is that? Yeah, I heard from Jimmy too after he got back. Yeah,
Jimmy's a nice guy.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, and the thing about it, like I just like to say about tag team partners, I left one person out. You knew who that was, don't you? Ricky
who?
Morton.
Oh
yeah.
Took
Ricky on the road with me in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff too for people listening. Some of that, a good deal of it's on YouTube with you guys and the grapplers and everything. And that, you know, a lot of people, you know, Ricky Morton, they think of the Rock and Roll Express as far as his tag team exploits go. But, you know, that predates that. And I tell you, the Lucas Morton, again, if you don't believe me, just look on YouTube how good that stuff was.
Well, Kenny,
you know,
Kenny kind of helped educate Bobby Eaton too.
Oh, yeah. And Bobby was a nice kid too. I like Bobby a lot.
Yeah,
and
Bobby's good
like Ricky. Ricky went through some hard times, you know. But, see, everybody thought Ricky was my son. And I had a hell of a time telling people. I said, he's not my boy. They said, oh, don't tell us that. He does everything just like you, you know what I mean, and everything. And he told me many times, he said, no, Luke, I copy your style. I said, Ricky, I'm proud to have you do it. Ricky's a credit to me, and I like Ricky a lot.
Yeah, Ricky's a hell of a worker. Well, Bobby was a hell of a worker, too.
Bobby was a good worker.
Yes.
We you know, the thing about it is, like, I hear so many people saying about, you know, well, why'd you stay down there and it was no money drawn? Well, maybe not when they were down here, but when we were here, we had the same 10, 11 guys here for all these years. And Rocky McGuire, you know, I told a guy one time, he says, well, I don't know why you had crappy. I said, let me tell you something, friend. I said, you guys had guys coming in every week, every other week, new guys on TV, feed your fish. I said, we had the same guys down there for 10, 11, 12 years. One guy go out for a year, come back in, 6 months, come back in. And I said, we drew money. And I said, that's not easy to do. I said, Rocky McGuire was a super promoter. A lot of guys, here we go, didn't like him. A lot of guys, like I say, but it don't matter. If you have a good standing and you got guys that'll work together and everything, you can make money. There got to be so many big heads in this business anymore or less that you know that they think that they're way ahead of all of us. You know what I mean? And
right.
I can understand that. I can understand that, you know. And I don't ever look at it that way. It's like the guys that was on the bottom on our cards, they was the ones that helped us get over.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
I'm just talking straight to you. And
sure. Well, you know, that's what Leo Garibaldi told me years ago. One time he said, kid, you're a hell of a worker. And I said, thank you. He said, that's the good news. The bad news is you're going to have to put a lot of people over because there's a lot of guys in this business that aren't.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, it seems to be amazing. Bob Armstrong, we've talked about, like, Bob Armstrong, as far as he doesn't get his due, as far as, like, today's fans and newsletter reader and things like that, he doesn't get his due because people can't understand, well, that he didn't venture off to anywhere else. And people like you guys and Austin Idol, Jerry Stubbs, have all said the same exact thing. And what I find, and I don't know if this is irony or not, you guys tell me, the Knoxville reunion and the Mobile reunion, which is for you guys only, you know, for a bunch of guys that didn't go a whole lot of places, and you guys weren't supposed to be all that good and all that other nonsense, you guys seem to stick together quite well, whereas a lot of other guys just flat don't.
Oh, I understand that. And you know, another thing, too, I like to say that, you know, Bob Armstrong comes out to see me at the market. I work the flea markets down here. And he comes by and sees me, and I was partners with Bob Armstrong up in Birmingham and Chattanooga for about a year and a half. And he was coming in from Atlanta, Georgia. He was a fireman. And then another guy comes by and sees me all the time, him and his wife. And I think the world of this guy and his wife is Adrian Street and Linda.
Yeah,
and
Adrian's a good guy.
Adrian looks like he's 45 years old. He stays in really good shape, you know. And I've met him down here. It was the first time. Come out and we talked. And he comes by every week, and we always talk and have a good rap. Excuse me. And Adrian's just a super nice guy.
Yeah, really. You know, Mike, back when we were in our prime, Kenny and I were in our prime, there were a lot of great workers that nobody ever heard of, right, Kenny? I mean, guys
who
never...
Sure, that's the truth, Liz. You said it right on the head there.
Yeah.
You said it right on the head there, you know.
Do you watch the current product at all, Ken?
Once in a while, I'll look at it. You know, I've got where you got more, instead of wrestling, you've got more conversation. But how can you knock it? It draws.
Yeah. Well, their numbers have dropped off a little bit, too, because of...
I've heard that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has.
Just like I thought, probably one of the greatest world champions there was. He stood about 6'1", 6'2", and weighed about 212, 215. And I worked with him in Dothan. We sold it out for almost half a year up in Dothan, myself and him. And I liked him a lot, and I felt sorry that he passed away. And I heard a lot of guys say, he's all right. He's just too small to be the world champion. It was Jack Briscoe. And I thought he was everything a world champion was supposed to look like.
Harley was a good
Flair, all of these guys that was world champions were good, but I had my pick, and I liked Jack Briscoe. I liked Harley. You know what I'm saying? The Funk Boys were good.
You worked with all the champions along the Gulf Coast, all the world champions at one time or another, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I wrestled six of them.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Damn, you couldn't beat any of them, right?
Huh?
And you couldn't beat any of them, right?
No, you know what's really funny, Les?
What?
I went to a draw with every one of them.
Yeah. That's a talent.
Huh?
You know, a lot of people wouldn't understand that. I mean, now, like Monday night, I was, watching wrestling a little bit and saying, well, here's this guy. Everybody was a champion. This guy's 4-time this champion. This guy's 10 times champion. And but the point is, the NWA world champion during our time, these guys could go in and virtually work with a broomstick if they had to. They worked with guys they'd never seen before.
That's correct. You've got that right.
And that was,
right.
Yeah. You know,
it's like your partner years ago, Kirby. He was a good worker.
Oh yeah, Kenny. Yeah, he was. Roger was a hell of a worker.
Was a hell of a worker. Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Joe Turner and the interns, Bill Him and Bill Bowman, they were good workers. That's the guys you could go out and have matches with.
Right, right.
Just like
and put in some time. That's the thing. When I tell guys that I was on spot shows where you had four wrestlers, they look at you like you're nuts. And I said, we work two singles, come back in a tag, and fill 2 hours on a show, for Christ's sake.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know. It was a whole different
Mike, we don't mean to leave you out of this conversation. Jump in.
No, I'll tell you, one of the names that I always wanted, Les, I've been meaning to ask you about, too, and I never get a chance to do it when guy from the who blipped the Gulf is on, but Gorgeous George Jr. is a name that, you see as far as being in match results and things like that, but there's not a whole lot really said about him, and I always, was curious about, him and his gimmick, because he seemed to just stay down there. What was the story of Gorgeous George Jr.?
Well, I'll tell you what, he came in. I worked with him in Laurel, Mississippi, and I had one of the most stinkingest matches I've ever had with him in my life. And I knew he could work, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I got him in the dressing room, and I said, George, I said, what's wrong? Back then, as Les knows, we had 2 out of 3 falls. They only got 1 fall today. And I said, what's wrong? And he says, I'm scared to death of you. I heard so much about you. And I said, what are you talking about? And that's what he told me. And we went out there the second fall, and we had a masterpiece. But I couldn't believe it. I said, where'd you hear that? He said, I've heard that from a lot of guys. And I guess because I never got around a lot of people, Les. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So they always think because you're kind of a loner, you're a funny type of dude. So I don't know.
Well, I remember the first match I had with you, and I thought, geez, I've had street fights that were easier than this. But I've said on this show here that working with you, my friend, was a night off. It was always a pleasure. It really was.
Oh, I appreciate that, Les.
And you'll send me a check in the morning, right?
Huh?
And you'll send me a check in the morning.
That'd be great, Les. I don't know. Like, you guys are talking about Boyetta. This is a story that I heard, and I don't know how true this is or what, so we'll take it from here. But if this is the way it was, I think it'd be a good deal. I heard he broke his hip, and I heard he went in the emergency room to get knocked out so he could get his hip done. And when they put him asleep, he never woke up.
Is that what happened?
That's the story I've got. So
wow,
that's as close to reality that I've heard. Les, how the business is. Everything gets built out of higher and higher what it is.
Sure.
Most people don't even know what happened. Just make up something to start.
Right, right.
But,
Is he still? Was he still living on the Gulf Coast? I know.
Oh yeah, he was in Mobile.
Yeah, because I know I never when I was go down there in March. I know guys would talk about Mike, but I don't believe he ever came out to the reunion at all.
He did it one time, but he got shafted from there.
Yeah.
So for going out and having a drink.
Well, I laugh at Fargo every March down there when they announce, no drugs or alcohol on the premises, and then here comes Donnie and Dorn. I'll say, how the hell did you get in here?
I know. Donnie's quite the guy, too. Donnie's a good friend of mine. I like Donnie a lot.
He's Mike, when we were in Nashville at the reunion, I spoke up and I said, two of the best damn workers I've ever seen in the business are with us here today, and that would be Kenny and Donnie Fargo, and I swear.
Yeah, you said it. I appreciate that, Lance. I appreciate it.
Well, you are, man. You were versatile. You're a hell of a heel, a hell of a baby face, and it was, I've seen you take guys in the ring that weren't very talented and make them look good, and that's a talent within itself, and that's one of the things that there's very few guys today that are capable of doing that.
Yeah.
But,
on the radio and everything, but have you seen any of that concert they have for Sandy with Bruce Springsteen? Bon Jovi's on now. They had Pink Floyd on there. I didn't realize how good they were in person. And they
I never saw them in person.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
And that's on for another hour. You guys get a chance. I think, like he said, if we could just all of us just send in $1, I'd give us $3 billion. Well, I know the thing about it, Les, those people got hit hard.
Yeah.
They down here, we got hit a lot of times, and they made a fuss out of it. It always was New Orleans, or it came into Mobile, went away. When we had a couple of those bad ones down here, We got wiped out here, too.
Yeah, you lived through a couple heavy hurricanes down there,
storms,
right?
Six storms down here, Les, and I never had a scratch. And I got a little mobile home I live in out in the country by the beach.
Right.
And but
I remember what was the one that wiped out Dauphin Island?
I know what you're talking about.
What year was that? That was what?
Way back.
Yeah. That was in what, 77, 70?
Yeah, something like that.
Six,
yeah.
Something like that.
Well, you know,
wasn't
that
the one? Wasn't that the one where Frank and Ina lost everything?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to probably sound like a dumb question, but, you know, a lot of you talk about the snow outs earlier and things like that. As far as some of those Gulf storms that blew in the summertime and things like that and situations like that that happened, did that affect anything, or did you guys just bunker down?
Oh, yeah, it slowed everything. Now, see, what it does to affect people that work the beach line, work the bars down here and the gift shops and everything, it knocks them out of work. And there was not a lot of work down here at the time anyway, you know what I'm saying? And then these guys go out, and my son did this, and he had a truck and had a saw and everything, and he went around and did cleanups and made pretty fair money for this guy he worked for. And it was a terrible thing. I mean, it looked like that a bomb had hit Pensacola Beach. I got on down there and go through. I couldn't even believe what I seen. And what was funny about it, that hurricane would hit one home and wipe it out, and the next one right beside it didn't touch. Hit the next one, didn't touch. And it was strange. It was weird. It was really a weird situation. Excuse me. But there was a lot of people that lost everything they had, and it was really sad. You know?
Yeah, that's a shame. Yeah, that New York thing, boy, I think a lot of it, from what I've read, too, where they were so ill-prepared. You know, or a lot of people thought, they're making more out of it than it's really going to be. But
that's what the lady said on here, Les, here a few weeks ago, right before after this thing hit. She said, I'm going to be really honest with you. We got warned. But she said, we didn't pay a lot of attention because we didn't think it was going to be as bad as they thought.
Right.
And, man, when that thing came through here, man, come through up there, they never even had an idea what was going to happen.
Did you stay on through the storms, or did you evacuate?
No, I stayed through two storms out here, and the rest of the time I went in and stayed at my boy's house over in Pensacola. He lived out in the country kind of, too.
Right.
But the thing about it here, Les, that storm Dennis that came in after the big one,
right,
it would have been worse than the one that was here back in the 80s, 90s,
wow,
whatever it was. But the thing about it, didn't have any staying power. It only lasted an hour and 15, 20 minutes. Well, that
right.
other one lasted 16 hours. And I've never seen any storm do that. The trees were being pulled up, looked like the hand of God. It grabbed a hold of them and just pulled them out of their root.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. And I'll tell you what's really hard to do. And if people may say, well, he's nuts. Well, maybe I am. But when the lights go out and you don't have no lights, even when you're close to your house and your road, you won't find it. It's the doggonest thing I've ever seen in my life.
You know, we mentioned Boyette, but you and I were both down there when Brad Armstrong started in the business, and that loss really hit me hard, too, with Bradley.
Oh, Brad was one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. He had he was a gentleman.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
He would kid and rib with you and everything, you know, and I heard that. I didn't believe it at first.
I know,
But,
you know, I had seen him. He was damn near in the same shape in his 40, at 51 that he was when he was 18, for Christ's sake.
I know,
so that would made it even more a shock, I think, because physically
he only worked about a week before with Dr. Tom, right, in that tag team match.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what a super guy.
Yeah.
So what a lot of people don't understand about Bob, too, and Bob's a loner, too, you know.
Yeah.
And Bob stays pretty well to himself. He comes out to see me, and I appreciate that a lot, him and his wife. And when Bob came out to that day, we had a good cry on each other's shoulders. I'm not being, overabundant with that sort of thing, but I knew right what he was going through because I just lost my son in May.
Right.
And when you go through something like this, Les, it's something that's taken away from you. that you don't replace. But
and it's got to be tougher on you guys. I mean, you know, I've lost both my parents, you know, and you expect that. I mean, you're not ready for it, and it hurts. But to lose your children, that's got to even be more hurtful and emotional, because you don't expect it, right?
Yeah. I've had a lot of people ask me, they said, and this may sound cruel to a lot of people, you know, and this is just the way I believe. I've had a lot of them say to me, what was the worst that you ever had done? Lose a child or lose your wife? Anita. And
yeah.
I'll tell you why I say that, Les, because we did everything together.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
And yes, I do.
Anita was a pretty girl, had a good personality. Well, you knew Anita real well.
Well, sure,
and,
yeah. She was a lovely lady.
Oh, yeah,
she was. Talk about, she put up with you all those years. She had to be a good person.
She told me down there, Les, she said, Kenny, she says, I'm so lucky to have you. She said that you are probably one of the only guys that's in professional wrestling that's straight. So, you know.
Bless her heart,
you know,
she could lie with a straight face.
Huh?
I said, bless her heart, she could lie with a straight face.
Yeah, she could. No, I missed over it. You know, it's just funny. You just wonder how time goes by. You know, Les, she's been dead over 20 years.
Is that right?
My God.
Yeah,
she died 92.
Yeah. Mike, Kenny and Anita lived above me in Knoxville in the apartments.
That's right. By herself.
Yeah. We had a hell of a crew there, Kenny. And we really did.
Yeah. I was glad to see Rupert. I never got around those guys too much, Les.
Right.
And the thing about it, you know, there was no feelings. Everybody had their own way to do it. But if, like with the Fullers, if you're seen with one of the Fullers or doing something, it's against the principle of the boys. They think that you're, you know, boy, what a big sucky this guy is, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't that good. Ronnie was always treating me nice. Robert treated me good. And the thing about it is, you know, me and you, I think, hung together better than anybody.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Who was some of the talent that was up there at the time, Les, when it was all stacked up there?
Well, it was Kenny. There was Kevin Sullivan. There was, Bob Roop. Bob Orton Jr.
Bob Orton Jr.
Garvin.
Garvin, I was glad to see Ronnie. Joe, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was... It was a hell of a crew,
Well,
you know, that's the thing. We're talking about some small territories like Mobile or Knoxville in the 60s and 70s, but those places were deep in talent. I mean, you could shuffle some guy from the opening match and put him in the main event if you got him
that's
over.
Right.
And he was as talented as the guys working on top anyway, right, Ken?
Oh, yeah, you're sure right. That's the truth there. Like I made that comment, how are you going to promote for 10, 11 years and have only 10 or 11 guys and drive with the same guys, that's remarkable to me.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Ken, how was your life in Memphis in the time you were there?
Do what now? Pardon me.
How was life in Memphis and when you were there, when you actually moved over and worked for Jarrett for a while? Were you there for real long, and what did you think about the scene there?
No, I thought I stayed there the first time a little over a year. Excuse me, 2 years. Then I came back in, and I came back in as a booker. And I booked around all over the area there for doggone about 8-9 months. And then things fell apart, one of those deals, you know what I'm saying? And but there was a good crew there, and they had... King Lawler there drew a lot of money. Bill Dundee drew a lot of money. You know, Jimmy Vann, nice guy, drew a lot of money. And they had their crew, too, and we had the boys from Nashville had their crew, too.
I want to ask you something. Jerry Jarrett, in his book, said that when he took over as booker, you and I and Dennis all left because he was the booker. I left because Garibaldi had me a good spot in Tampa. Did you leave because Jerry took the book?
Well... Unless I was doing the booking then. And
right.
Dennis will tell you this story. That's when we sold out that double sides of the Coliseum in Memphis.
Right.
And he walked in, and Roy was with him, and Roy said, this is going to be our new booker here, Jerry Jarrett. And I thought, Johnny Walker walked over to me and said, what the hell's going on? I said, I don't have a clue. So I went back, I called Nick and told him I said, I'm done. Jackie Fargo, all the guys around there told me to stay, stick, you know what I mean? I said, no, I'm gone.
Right.
That's the reason I left. And I think about it now that, you know, that Jerry was young at the time and different things, and Roy wasn't the most popular guy on the block. And the thing about it, I just thought the way it was done was real cheap.
Yeah. Well, Jerry was really inexperienced at the time.
That's correct.
Green as grass. I mean, really.
Well, and I don't want to be rude here, but because I have a lot of respect for Jerry Jarrett, but he's, again, not the most intimidating-looking man in the world, and being a young guy and being so green, I mean, did anyone think that, okay, is this a rib or is somebody losing their mind, or did...
I couldn't figure out what was going on. I mean, if we wasn't, you know, we'd be like both sides, Dennis and myself against the Yankees, Frank Morrell and Eddie Sullivan. And the thing about it is the deal, the finish was pulled, that I didn't want nobody to know it, nobody did know it but me and Dennis, because then Eddie and Frank. And we did what we did on TV. I knew it was going to light it up, and we did. And that place, we went down there Monday, and that place, the people were standing in line to get in, and I knew we clicked. So, you know, here we go again.
You know, Jerry first came in there, he was just came in to promote. That's
right.
All he was going to do. And then from that, he decided he was going to be a referee. And we educated him. What I mean by that is he basically got his education in the ring with us, you know, when he worked anybody's match. And then he decided he wanted to be a wrestler. And so, you know, he evolved that way. But still, that all took place in what, Kenny, the space of 2 years maybe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't.
I have nothing against Jerry. Jerry was a smart man. He made a lot of money and promoted a lot of money, you know. But I thought the situation was done. You know, I thought it was done in kind of a cold way, and I should have used my head more, too. Walker says, man, don't walk out of this place. This place is going to go down to nothing. And I said, I'm not walking out. I'm giving my notice. I'm going. And I figured something's coming up. Because he was coming around the dressing rooms, you know what I mean? And,
right.
And Roy. And see, let me tell you a little story, and I'll be very blunt with you about this, Les. I worked in that office, and I got quit where I quit going to the office to do the booking. I went to my home and did it.
Right.
And the thing about it, Roy and Nick, you know, the heel and the baby face, correct?
Right.
It was just the opposite way around. Nick took the heat, and Roy was the one that agitated everything. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh,
they
yes, absolutely.
They kept animosity going between the boys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was
You need to talk
crazy
to Roy about that. You know what I'm saying? It was all a big con job, and guys fell for it.
Herb used to tell the story that Herb had the license for Dyersburg, and Roy said, I want to borrow your license. What he didn't tell Herb was that I'm going to run against you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was...
Oh, I know. I know.
Ken, once more, I did want to ask you about, because I've heard Jim Ross kind of talk about the Bass tag team, and you and Ricky Starr against the Ron and Don Bass and Ma Bass, where Moolah got involved, and I wish there was footage of that somewhere, because just from how, you know, it's been described by people, it was just absolutely great stuff. Can you talk about that a little bit, and as far as, you know, the character of Ma Bass?
Well, the thing about it, I like Ma a lot. And the only time I got where I didn't like her, that she hit me on the head with the purse that she had either. I thought it was a brick. Man, she caved my head in. I'm not kidding you. And she didn't mean to do it, you know what I'm saying? But her charm in that ring, she was solid-faced. She had a charisma with the people that, you know, that the people just hated her, the passion. Well, Moolah, at that time, was world champion. And I met Moolah out in the 50s out in Arizona. And I traveled with Moolah a lot. Moolah was nice and everything. We talked one time. She called me on the phone, and she says, Ken, she says, they want me to come in a six-man tag match. Well, a woman, Ma Bass, and two Bass against myself, Ricky Starr, and her. She said, what do you think? And I said, we can do nothing but money. And we did. But she had that charisma. Moolah had a charisma. You know what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
And it's like Ricky Starr. Ricky was a ballet dancer. And Ricky only weighed like 180. He used to run at the beach here like it was going out of style. Well, a lot of guys tried to beat Ricky in a shoot, and they couldn't do nothing with him. And Mickey was a rough little guy. He was the type of guy that he'd sell for you, he'd do everything for you, but don't get cute with him. And it was just something that fell in place, and it was just great. And then when Les and Ma broke up, was it Ma? What's the girl's name that's up for the WWF, Les? McMahon's territory. What's that Moodle's friend? May Weston?
Yeah.
After you broke up, she was never the same either, you know.
You're right. Yeah, right.
She was never the same. And I've often wondered about that. But it was all right. You was okay, guy, Les. I had a lot of fun with Les and all those guys. Dennis, I like Dennis a lot. He's funny.
Oh, we always had a lot of fun together. Mike, we were talking about this in Nashville. Dennis, there was this girl named Sarah from Atlanta who came up to Nashville to visit Dennis. And so she was going back to – but we were going to Chattanooga and the three of with Dennis, Kenny, and I, and she was going to ride as far as Chattanooga, and she was going to catch a bus from there back to Atlanta. So Kenny and I are in the back seat, and we start this whole thing about when you two get married, and Dennis is looking over his shoulder, basically saying, "Shut up, don't start that crap." And we were talking about having Chico Cortez sell pictures at the wedding, and how we're going to work an angle and get juice on Dennis at the wedding. But that's how we killed time. We had fun. That was the main thing.
Oh, well, you know, you heard the story about me and Dennis. We went into Memphis, didn't you?
What was that?
About the guy taking a leak on his head?
No.
We stayed at the YMCA downtown. No. And me and Dennis got up one morning. I said, "You want to get a little work out with weights?" Dennis saw his head and never worked out and had a body like $1 million.
Right.
And we did what we did and went and got a little breakfast and everything, and we went to the car. I mean, we was going to the car, and we stood outside the building at the YMCA, and all of a sudden, Dennis says, "God dang it." He said, "What the hell's going on?" There was a guy up there on the second, third floor was taking a whiz on his head. It didn't seem. Dennis went crazy. I said, "Don't get mad, Dennis." And he says, "Oh, this territory's got me down already." Well, that wasn't the pitch. When we got down to where his car was, guess what? They got in his car and took his stereo, everything he had, his clothes, and everything.
Oh.
And we went back, and they said he got a phone call, and his mother was looking for him, and somebody told Nina that we were sleeping in the car. We had no place to stay. And he went berserk. And I never laughed so hard in my life. And, you know, Dennis was a funny guy. He didn't like to get ribbed sometimes. But he took it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That just put the finishing touches on him there when that guy took a leak on his head.
Oh. No, I had never heard that one.
Huh?
I hadn't heard about that. That's like, wild.
Oh, yeah. He told Bob Roop, he says, "Yeah." He says, "Luke sold me a bunch of clothes down there in Mobile." And he said, "I took them," and he said that none of them fit. I said, "That's what I told you to lose weight, Dennis." But we had some really good times.
We really did. It was...
Oh, man, it was unbelievable. It was just, you know, that's life is just but a dream. And
now... It's that whole corporate atmosphere so much. Well, you know, like Sputnik probably couldn't even get a – I mean, they kick his ass out of the dressing – fire him. I mean, he was
– Bill Watts threw him out.
Yeah, but he was entertaining, was he not? I mean, you know, it was just –
Oh, he was super, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sputnik – I was his partner in Amarillo, then he put me with Art Nielsen. But,
yeah.
I can't see Sputnik and Bill Watts being in the same room together for too long.
No, he came in one night and Bill Watts told him to get out, you know. And I thought that was very wrong because, excuse me, even though Sputnik did wrong sometimes, and we all do that, I didn't think that he deserved that in front of all the boys, you know what I mean? But that's the way some people are.
Sputnik knew how to work the people. He was,
he was great.
Jesus, yes, he was. First time I worked with him, I was working the Kansas City territory in '63, and he was just passing through, and Geigel put me with him in Wichita, and I'd never met him before. And I'll never forget, because he said, now, when you make your comeback, kid, taking backdrops. He said, now, when you get ready, he said, help me get up there. And I remember, you know, giving him a boost off that backdrop, and I, like, took a step forward and turned, and he was still in the friggin' air when I turned. I thought, Jesus
oh, yeah.
Christ, but he was a hell of a bump machine. He really was. He loved to work.
Yeah. I talked to Billy Wicks called me here a little while after my son passed away, and I like Billy a lot, you know. And Billy and Sputnik, they drew so much money in Memphis. It was unreal.
Yeah. Billy lives not too far from my in-laws in Maggie
Is
Valley,
right?
North Carolina. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see him when I was down there at Thanksgiving, but I guess he's
like
not getting out of the house much now.
Yeah.
He was a tough son of a gun, boy.
Oh, I've heard stories about him. It'll scare you.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, well, you know, he trained a kid.
The kid was on the sheriff's department.
Yeah, but there's a kid from there in North Carolina that when Billy, before he, you know, got to where he couldn't move around so well, I can't remember the kid's name, but he was teaching him catch style, and the kid goes over to Europe and gives seminars. Now, I guess the kid's that good, but, yeah, Billy was
wow.
a hell of a shooter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, Les, the guys that think they can wrestle, and everything. I went down to the gym in Oklahoma. When I was in Oklahoma, I went down there with Tim Woods.
Right.
And Tim was one heck of a good wrestler, too.
Right.
The only thing that was different between Tim and some of the guys, Tim didn't have a killer instinct. Tim was just an all-American nice guy. But he could wrestle you straight up and take you down on the mat.
But sometimes working with Timmy, he was clumsy as hell.
Oh, my God. I know.
He was.
Watch you don't get a knee or a leg broke.
Right.
You know?
But you're right. He was a hell of a good guy. Hell of
oh,
a
yes,
good guy.
Oh, yes, he was. He's one of the nicest guys in the business.
Yeah.
When it came to that, did he just have two left feet sometimes? Because, you know, did you heard that from him before? Or was it his eyesight? What was it with when he would have those off nights? Or what
oh,
was
I don't know.
I don't either. It was just, no, it's just timing.
He just may go through half a match, and all of a sudden, bam. He can
yeah, half a step off or something.
Back. I thought he set my vertebrae in. Jesus.
Ken, it's been an hour now. I don't want to tie you up for the whole night here. And
no, you guys do what you got to do. I appreciate it. You know, I like lying to you and everything. It's good.
Well, that's all right. Les lies to me every week.
And I'm good.
I'm really glad you guys called me and got me to come on here, asked me to come on. It's a pleasure, really.
I'm gonna tell you what, it was wonderful seeing you in Nashville. It really was, because I've missed
well,
you.
Well, I didn't like the situation I was in, but everybody helped me out so good. Joe Turner took care of me like a dream.
Yeah, well, you're worth it, my friend. You deserve it. You have contributed so much to the wrestling business. You've given so much, and you deserve everything.
You know what hurts more than anything, Les?
What?
When you've been active like I did, I used to walk with Anita. We used to walk 5 or 6 miles a day.
Right.
And when you get in a situation like I'm in now, see, I don't have any balance, and I don't want to go down again and have more problems. You know what I mean?
Right, sure.
So I'm trying to do. I'm still working out, doing what I got to do, and some days I walk halfway decent, other days I don't. But see, that day is up there, I couldn't even get out of the chair.
Right.
And all those guys carried me in the house and brought me down, you know, and I felt embarrassed, but like a guy said, he said, hell with it. He said, you deserve this. He said, you can't walk.
Well, you know, Mike, what he's talking about, we helped him out, and he said, I appreciate. I said, listen, you carried me a few times in the ring, so I don't have a problem helping you. So
a few times. I carried you every match we had.
Oh, there you go.
No, Les was a dream. Les was great. All those guys, we just had an all good around crew all over. It was great.
Listen, when I come down there in March, if I get a chance, I want to come over and hang out a little bit.
Oh, Ronnie Garvin said he was coming over to get me to coming down in March, too. He said he wants to go over and hang out, too. Maybe we all get together.
Good, good. We'll have a couple beers and play some old doo-wop music. How about that?
Oh, I got some doo-wop. You know who just died recently?
Who?
Just broke my heart. It was Joe South. The games people play now.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, he had about 11 hits. and Joe didn't have a very happy life either. But somebody always sang his hits like Loretta Ann Never Promised Me a Rose Garden.
Right.
And he had Down in the Boombox by Billy Joe Royal. But Joe was always one of my favorites. And
yeah, but Joe Royal's from Cincinnati. He's a Cincinnati boy.
Is that right?
Yeah, he lived in the same apartment complex I did here back in, that would have been probably 63 or 4, I guess. And,
okay.
Yeah,
Joe was something. He was a good songwriter, man. He had just like another guy died here not just recently, too. And a guy, he was 91 years old. I didn't realize how old he was. Was the guy who did Willie and the Hand Jive, Johnny Otis.
Johnny Otis, yes.
Yeah, he just passed away, 91 years old.
I know on TV here, I think it was last week, they were somebody was saying Little Richard was celebrating his, 85th birthday or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They said he tore the fair up down here this year around.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Cool.
So,
what,
is that guy having a fit or what?
He's charged.
Mike's having a seizure.
That amazes me.
He what?
I said 85. Yeah, how? And he actually was performing still?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like he did 25 years ago. Yeah.
That's what turned me on to rock and roll initially. When first time I heard Tutti Frutti on a jukebox when I was probably, 14 years old.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, I have arrived. That was what made me fall in love with rock and roll, I think.
Oh, I know. I loved rock. You did too.
Yeah. Yep.
Where'd the good old days go, Les?
Oh, hell. We got good memories, though, Kenny. That's the main thing.
I got to go down to the recording studio, me and my wife and myself and my wife and Kenny. And he treated us like gold down there.
Yeah.
He treated us like gold. And I like Jerry Lee a lot.
Bobby Goldsboro was a Ken Lucas fan, wasn't he?
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
That girl that worked down at the club, she told me that she asked him one night, she said, who's your favorite wrestler? And he says, Ken Lucas. Oh, Bobby's had a lot of good hits, too. I don't know where he's at now.
I don't know either. Probably some of these kids that are listening to the show wouldn't even know who the hell Bobby Goldsboro is.
Oh, I know. And Honey, I Love You, is that what it is?
Yeah.
That record, Honey, was a super record. See the Funny Little Clown? Yeah, Bobby had a lot of good
things. That was one thing that we all had in common was with the Armstrongs, was the love for the 50s rock and roll and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, super good. Yeah. How long does your show last, Les?
Huh?
How long does your show last?
Until we get ready to go home.
Are you serious?
Well, I mean, it never goes longer than 2 hours, but sometimes we go shorter.
I got you.
Mike only takes so many of my lies, and then he hangs up on me, so it's...
I got you, man. Well, it's been doggone sure a pleasure talking to you two guys.
You too, my friend. I want you to know it's those were some of the best times I had in the business when we got a chance to travel and hang out together.
I think me too, Les. I really do.
Absolutely.
I go back through time. You go back and see how many guys that I found an old picture back here and the back. I'm going through some of the stuff back there. There was a lot of stuff left here, and I found a picture of myself and Eddie Sullivan in 1964.
Yeah,
on the beach in Pensacola, Florida.
Yeah, him and Morrell were a hell of a team, boy.
Yes, they were a good team.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Ken,
appreciate you coming on, and we're going to have to do this again sometime.
Well, yeah, if you want to do it tomorrow.
Well,
I'll tell you what, you guys.
Tomorrow he can get on with Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates.
That's right, Mike Norris.
Is Jerry still around?
Yeah, Jerry's up in Savannah now. He's driving a little four-wheel. He's a beach cop.
He gets to ride around
on the beach and tell people they can't eat out there or something. I don't know what he does.
Yeah, put that beer away.
I like Jerry a lot.
Yeah, Jerry's good people. Good
he
people.
Sure is. Guys, thanks.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, my friend. I love you, brother.
I love you guys, too. Thank you. Anytime you want me, let me know a week ahead of time.
All right,
awesome.
My friend.
Absolutely.
You have a good Christmas and a good New Year, and I look forward to seeing you when I come down in March.
I got you, brother. I want to do that, Les.
All right, good. God bless you, my friend.
God, same with you guys, and don't forget Sandy back there. Send a dollar in and help him out.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Sir.
Bye-bye.
Take
care,
Kenny.
We'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting, here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody's business. So please, plan ahead, designate before you celebrate. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
We will not be an easy target. We will never roll over and let pain plan our day, or let an ache tell us what we can and cannot do. We will not linger on the sofa, ask somebody else to bring us the mail, or take the parking space closest to the door. But what we will do is take action. We will plan ahead. We will protect our bodies and fight back by moving. Lace up our sneakers and grab our tennis rackets. We will bowl. We will do our morning laps and bike ride through Saturday afternoon. We will walk our dogs around the block. We will pass up the elevator and proudly take the stairs. Because arthritis can't beat us if we beat it first. In the fight against arthritis, you need a weapon. What's yours? To learn more, visit us at fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we're committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof,
be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for
off a good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrath, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and Santa baby. Eartha Kitt, see, that's a song.
I was just going to say, the original by Eartha Kitt, yes.
Should never be redone again. I'm so sick of people murdering these old songs that are so good and wanting to put their own spin on them.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, you can't appreciate what a sense of humor Kenny Lucas has got. I mean, unless you really, I mean, he, with a straight face, would just, I mean, would rib the hell out of people. And, you know, a lot of guys didn't even know he was ribbing sometimes.
It sounded like he was deadpan and, you know, those lines. And I'm just thinking with his pedigree and the ability to beat you down and tie you in knots if he wanted to, man, he had to kill the young guys. He had to scare the hell out of them.
He was funny. I mean, he'd say, hey, Mike, let me ask you a question. What's that, Ken? Is that your real body?
His pedigree and his line, we talked about a couple of guys. Like Paul Christie, not a whole lot of people know unless you grew up in Indianapolis, Detroit, that area where he kind of got his most notoriety for the most
Chicago,
part.
Chicago,
yes, yeah. You know, in that area, I mean, just, you know, starting off with Kevin Sullivan and Ricky Morton over in Southwest, and
like I said, he tutored Morton, he tutored Bobby Eaton. And I think both of them turned out okay.
Yeah, two of the best workers as far as life, the best, you know, baby face in peril where he's, you know, tears running down his face and he's got his arm reached out and you just, you know, you felt for Ricky Morton and Bobby Eaton who the 90s especially, the early 90s, late 80s where almost to a person, Bobby Eaton was one of the best workers in the world, and still probably, you know, to this day, because I guess I'm not sure if he goes out there anymore after his last situation, but he was still going out there and trying to teach young guys too, and just absolutely amazing. And both those guys could draw the line right to Kenny Lucas.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, and he was a good heel. When I first met Kenny, Kirby and I had gone into the Louisiana end for Lee Fields, and as a top babyface tag team, and Kenny was working heel at the time, so I got a chance to work with him the first time as a heel, you know, and was you know immediately impressed. That's when I first met him, but either way. He was a very talented man, and, you know, he could take guys out there that weren't that talented. Don Carson was a hell of a heel, but he was not a great worker in terms of, you know, being coordinated and, you know, bumps and that sort of thing. But he'd go out there with Kenny or you know, and hell, look like the greatest heel in the world.
That's right.
But, yeah.
And, you know, one of those guys that went with Ken to Southwest, along with Ricky Morton too, when they did go out there, Carson was the one that was managing the grapplers against them. And I don't know if the grapplers were I don't know if you knew who they were at the time, because that obviously wasn't the Denton Anthony team. Was that Len Denton
and who else?
Was that Len Denton and Tony Anthony? So they went with them too, then, right?
Well, I know Len was a grappler. I don't know if Tony was a grappler or not. Len was. Of course, there were grapplers all over the place. Johnny Walker was a grappler down in Tampa at one time.
That I didn't know. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He worked under the hood in Tampa as a grappler before he became wrestling, too.
I'll be damned. But for Rich, actually, let me know. Yeah, it was Tony Anthony that was a grappler over with him in Southwest too. So, you know, and that was a time, you know, when at that time they were on the USA Network, or they had just gotten Joe Blanchard brokered that deal with the USA Network, and you know, after those guys left, and obviously situations changed and things changed, we're changing all over the place. But you know, after that, it was Sweet Tan and Embry and.
it was not exactly the same as it was when those guys were there and they were doing their best stuff in Southwest, and that may have been, that honestly may have been the, you know, the pinnacle of Joe Blanchard's success out there, actually, was when those guys were in.
Yeah. You know, I just met Embry in Nashville in September for the first time.
He was, well, what was he like? Because he was always, at the
I saw him work on Dallas's TV, but I, but we never actually met till this past September. And,
really intriguing to me because at that time, I mean, there was just, I don't know, how did he connect with the crowd from what you remember? Because watching as a viewer on TV as a kid, it's like you have all these other monsters and things like that, but it was like Embry was one of those guys that just, I don't know, he just kind of like sucked me in as being a sympathetic guy.
Well, you know, and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the guys that didn't have a great size as heels were sneaky heels, right? I mean, it was, you know, they came across as, you know, that way and got over. But as babyface, it was, well, you know, you were talking, you know, as a babyface, I was never big. Ricky Morton's not a big guy. It was just, you know, it was a timing issue, Mike. It was not so much what you did, it was when you did it. That's the thing that's kind of lost now. You know, you can watch two kids like on a good indie show. They'll go out and do some tremendously athletic stuff, you know, and people, yeah, oh, woo, and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But it's not, you know, the difference of watching it as a wrestler is they're not telling a story. They're not, you know, a story in the context of writing a book is my point, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. They're just out there doing spots. And the thing, you know, the guys that I worked with in the 60s and the 70s is you told a story, you built to something. You you know, it's like, for example, if I worked with a heel that was had a lot of size difference, you know, it was when we did, you know, it was like we set up the thing where to show the size difference, but then I outsmarted him, and then finally, you know, I got my comeuppance because he, you know, finally got his first shot in to shut me down with some heel move, but we told a story. And I remember well, because you're on the Observer site, you've heard all the discussions about Big Bill Miller. And
yeah.
Bill was hell. I mean, he was in Big Ten amateurs. Bill was the only guy, one of the few guys, or one of the only, I don't remember, that beat Ganya, you know, in Big Ten amateur wrestling competition. But Bill also had a temper. And, I mean, I remember as a kid watching when Bill debuted as a pro. And when I'll never forget, I first worked with Bill in Huntington, West Virginia. And I, to be honest, I was nervous. This was probably 63, and I, you know, only been in the business a few years and never met him. And I'm thinking, okay, you're booked with Big Bill Miller. Oh, all right. But he came and, you know, he said, you're a Buckeye too, which for those who don't know, that's the Ohio Buckeyes. I said, yeah, Bill was I said, yeah. So we talked. He said, well, you know, I'm going over tonight, but you know, we want to get you over too. And so he laid out this, you know, where I, you know, did some cute things and outmaneuvered him. And but that was the whole thing too. The fact that he was, you know, taller and heavier wasn't the point with him. The point was he knew he was going to get his hand raised, but he wanted to get his hand. He wanted to beat somebody that meant something. He wasn't just going out there and, you know, and beat me down from the get-go. And so we went out there and told a story and got the reaction we wanted from the crowd. But that's the whole thing. It's not so much this guy throws a good punch or does a good – it's not – it's when that happens. And the great ring generals could orchestrate that so beautifully. Nelson Royal was a tremendous ring general. I mean, he could go out there and just, you know, build a match. And the beautiful thing about that, these guys built the matches on the fly. Lucas was the same way. You know, it wasn't – you didn't sit down in the dressing room and talk about it for hours before you did it. You didn't go out and practice your finish like they do the day, you know, before the crowd gets there. A lot of times you never met a guy until you saw him in the ring. You know, well, like Kenny, you know, we're talking about the NWA champions. They worked with a lot of guys, you know,
they say, okay, we need you to go 60 minutes with this guy tonight, and they've never met the guy before. And so, I mean, that's a talent that's been lost. And when I say that, I'm it's not an old guy, you know, with sour grapes, or I'm not mad, I'm not, it's just a fact, you know. And you can't learn that by doing 4 or 5 minute matches. You just can't. I mean, it's impossible. And, you know, that's the big difference in the artistry, I think, of the 60s and the 70s versus what you see today.
And the one thing I love about down there, too, you know, where you guys were from Knoxville South, the fact that, again, you know, as we talk about here, junior heavyweights, because Ken Lucas was not some 6'8", 300-pound monster, as a lot of you guys were not, but he was believable because they still knew you were tough guys. You were, you know, athletic guys. And, you know, that's another thing that territory gets, does not get anywhere near the level of respect it deserves, because those guys, you know, the guys who were not monsters were featured, and, you know, that they drew money and held up their end of the deal. And, you know, like, you know, as you guys talked about, you know, developed a lot of guys who learned how to work.
Right. Right.
And that's, you know, and again, as someone who was a, you know, not a huge guy or anything like that, and I always, you know, loved the junior heavyweights. Again, always had a fascination with Danny Hodge, and let alone Nelson Royal. And he was a little bit different when I was growing up. It, you know, there was, who was the Jimmy Garvin's tag partner? Steve Regal.
Yeah.
And things were changing a little bit. But, you know, again, those smaller guys I was drawn to because, you know, again, they were around my size. I'm 5'8", you know, and, you know, and of course, to find out later in wrestling, not everyone is, you know, 6'5", 6'6", as they seem on TV, especially when you're a little kid. You
right,
know, it
true.
Was those guys I gravitated to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you know, that's, well, you know, the rumor is, and I say rumor because I don't know if it's, you know, it's facts or it's going to happen, but I understand that I've heard that WWE is reaching out to some of the guys, mid-card guys, that actually were talented that have been let go because they realize the value in bringing it. Well, you know, we talked about it on here. I said, you know, that it would have paid off for them to put Brad Armstrong out on the road to work with, you know, guys like Ziggler and Kofi and you know, people like that, because, you know, and make them go 15, 20 minutes in a match, and they could learn more from him in 15 or 20 minutes than they can learn from working with each other 20 times. And
yeah.
So I think, and maybe Hunter, you know, maybe Triple H is the guy behind us. I don't know, but they're saying that they're, you know, reaching out to some of these guys to see if they want to come back, because they realize that these young athletes they've got now need somebody to guide them out there so they can actually learn, because they can't guide one another. It's, you know, it's, you can't teach what you don't know yourself. You know.
Yes. And I think now, you know, as we talk about, you know, at the very beginning of the show, that the headache of watching that three-hour show, and as bad as things are, you know, there is, on the flip side, a bright side because of the Tyler Blacks, Dean Ambrose's, the Ricky Steamboat Jr., you know, you name the guys, like Chris Hero is another one, where Claudio, they have got these guys who have tried to go make their bones around the world, and they've tried to go learn, and at a time where they need to develop, you know, the futures, they need to develop any stars, let alone future stars. They need to develop current stars. They're at a sensitive time where they can really, again, they can take advantage of all the talent they have at their disposal, along with the fact that they have all of these guys who, under licensed contracts, and who are agents and who are around where they can utilize them, and hopefully they do. And that's one thing with, you know, one thing that makes people happy, as Dave Meltzer keeps saying, once Hunter gets in there, he figures Kevin Dunn is going to be gone, and that's one big step for everyone who loves pro wrestling.
Yeah, probably.
Even if it turns
probably.
Out to be hollow, boy, would that be
yeah.
nice.
But, you know, when I said it's, you know, it's not so much what you do, but when you do it, that's the thing, that now you see good athletes, but it's like they go, two guys go out there for 5 minutes, and you do a couple cool moves, then I'll do a couple cool moves, and then you do a couple, and I'll do a couple. And it's, we're just trading back and forth, which doesn't establish a baseline where when you go out there and work 20 minutes, like, you know, Luke and I were talking about, you know, if I'm the babyface, I'm going to sell for you. Now, my comeback's going to be only good because I sold. I have to, you know, I have to get the other thing is you can't ask the audience to get behind you.
Yeah,
they have to want to get.
It's how you come
when
back.
When I, you know, I it drives me nuts, and it's a little thing, but it drives this whole stomp your foot and clap your hand baby face crap, or turning around and asking the people to get behind. It's like, first of all, if you've got time to turn around and ask the people to support you, then the guy you're wrestling isn't too damn tough to begin with if you can turn your back on him. Secondly, it's not about you. I mean, you know, it's you wanting to get behind me. Not that I am, you know, I shouldn't have to ask you. By my actions with that heel, you should want to finally support me when I get ready to make my comeback. And that's what's, you know, that those are little things that are missing, the little things that would make it so much more meaningful and probably, you know, help their numbers as far as television and their buy rates, I think, you know, on the, their pay-per-views. Speaking of buy rates, do you realize I talked to Mike Johnson today, and he was looking around on Amazon. The Professional Wrestler's Workout and Instructional Guide, written by Harley Race, Rick Steamboat, and myself, along with Alex Marvez, and a foreword by Jim Ross. Do you know what the high price today on Amazon was for that damn book?
No, what is it?
$1,900.
Good night.
Yes, I've heard, well, you know, a few months ago I heard $400. Then I heard just a couple weeks ago, well, actually Dave or Brian put it up on the site. Doc Young was out looking around. And he sent me, well, he sent them an email about it, but he sent me an email. He said, you know, that he said that damn book's brand new is $700. On, he said, I want you to sign this one. And I said, I only charge you $200 to sign it. But, yeah, Mike, we were doing our, you know, the Wrestler's Eye radio today for Insider. And he, while we were talking, he went on, he said, we were talking about the book, and I said, $700. He said, you want to double that and plus some? I said, we talking about? He said, one guy has got one on there that he is got the price at $1,900. I said, I wish I had a couple cases of those damn things.
Yeah,
I,
really.
I've got three to my name. Well, they're out of print, so that's what's made them, you know. But, you know, I'll tell you, a great compliment, Mike, was when I was up in Blue Ridge, Georgia, doing the training camp. Woody said that Ray Lloyd's coming up on Sunday to meet you. And that's, you know, Glacier from WCW. And we had never met. And I said, good, I'd like to meet. I'd never met Ray. I'd like to meet him. So anyway, he came in on Sunday, and we were introduced, and we were chatting. And he said, I'm going out to the car and get your training manual and have you sign it. And I thought he was, you know, like a Kenny Lucas. I thought he was ribbing. I said, yeah, sure. No, he said, really? He said, when I heard that you and Harley and Ricky had written a book, I knew it was worth having. And so he did go out and brought it in, and I was so honored. He is actually using a highlighted passages in that book throughout. And I thought, you know, because he works with some young guys occasionally. And I thought, wow, that's just, you know, it's amazing. You don't, I mean, when we did that thing, you know, it was just to make a few bucks, and, you know, you hope that somebody finds it worthwhile. But, yeah, yeah, that price today was $1,900.
Well, I'd say if you ever want to give one of yours up, I'd try to buy it. But do me a favor. Give me about 2 years' notice, and I'll try to scrape up.
You want to take a second mortgage on your house, right?
Yeah. I tell you.
Well, that's, you know, I said, Mike and I were talking. I said, you know, I can't even imagine if you had one that was, like, in pristine condition that was signed by all of us. What the, and Nigel and the original Matt Stryker are the models for that book. So Nigel as well could sign the thing. I mean, Christ, what would that book sell for, I wonder?
Don't remind him of that, because then he's going to want some sort of royalty for it.
I want to see Nigel's documentaries. I've heard somebody you know, they had a private screening on the internet on some site for those who invested money in it. But I heard it's really well done. I know he put his heart and soul in it. I really am anxious to see how it came out.
I'll tell you what, I'll get him to send you a copy, because I put in my, for my copy already, so that's already on order. So I'll try to get him to sign it for you, but I don't know if he'll just big time you.
I hear you.
Too, because I know we only have 30 seconds here, but I want to throw this out there too. I tell you, get Carl Anderson to invite you over. He was on Twitter talking about how he's going to be in his basement watching the Cincinnati game with a stiff drink in his hand. So I think you ought to go over there and invade his space and tell him that his quarterback's not really that good.
I heard that. I just got an email the other day. He's home for a while. We're supposed to catch lunch at Bob Evans, I think, here in the next week or so. So I'll tell him.
Hey, Les, what do you got coming up? Obviously, nothing.
I'm.
Oh, really?
Probably going out to L.A. We're going to start booking our Wrestling Cares tournament, which we're actually going to start. It's going to be year long. Well, it's going to be all next year. We're going to start in April, but I think we've pretty much got our talent picked out with a couple spots that we haven't done. But I'm going out to L.A. and sit down with David and probably in January and get that thing booked. So that's going to keep me busy. And, don't have any clinics booked for next year, but I'm open. You can hook me up, les@epwt.com, and I'll send you out the information if you're interested.
And I know everyone, because you can't stand to go a couple days without me, yes, or Brian Alvarez for that matter. Wrestling,
well, I should say, Vic and I are doing Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly on Friday, which for the Observer, and then, of course, Mike and I do Insider Wrestlers Eye Radio on Wednesday, and then I hang out with Mike Sempervisi on Wednesday night.
And I'm incredibly jealous, by the way, of Vic Sosa. Not only does he have the great radio voice, he's got a better spot on Sirius than Brian and I have on Sundays, darn it.
He does he does have a good voice, doesn't he?
He really does. And I forget the light station in New York. It's the biggest one there. But if you happen to want to check him out, I can't remember when he's on, but XM Sirius Channel 13, I think it is. So you got to check that out, too. But Les, thank you very much, sir. I want to thank Kenny Lucas, too, as well for being on tonight. But
always fun, Michael,
well,
and you have a good week, and I'll see you next Wednesday.
Yes, sir. See you, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.